Well, they're separated by just 90 miles of water. For decades, the United States and Cuba have been at each other's throats. To Washington, Cuba and its former leader Fidel Castro became a symbol of the perils of communism. To Cuba, the US came to embody the evils of capitalism. But is all of that about to change? Speaking within the past half hour, President Obama announced an historic shift in US policy towards Cuba after years of sanctions.
Today, the United States of America is changing its relationship with the people of Cuba. In the most significant changes in our policy in more than 50 years, we will end an outdated approach that for decades has failed to advance our interests, and instead, we will begin to normalize relations between our two countries. Through these changes, we intend to create more opportunities for the American and Cuban people and begin a new chapter among the nations of the Americas.
President Obama, well, the Cuban President Raúl Castro was also announcing the talks aimed at re-establishing diplomatic relations to his people at the same time. Joining me live to assess the significance of these changes are Pedro Freire, an expert in Cuban-American legal relations at Columbia Law School, and also John Kavalich, a senior policy advisor at the US-Cuba Trade and Economic Council in New York. Pedro Freire, let's turn to you first. How significant do you think these changes are? What did you hear that you thought was striking?
Well, I think that the first, it would not be an exaggeration to say that this is historic. The United States and Cuba have not had diplomatic relationships since 1961. So that to me is the most significant part of this announcement. And I think it indicates that President Obama has chosen Cuba as one of his legacies and leaving behind a new policy that goes away from the policy of isolation, which has been tried for 55 years and not resulted in anything of any great consequence, and try something a little bit different, and understanding that the Cuban government is far from being perfect, but the United States engages with less than perfect governments all over the world precisely in order to be able to promote our best interest and the best interest of the people that are subject to bad government.
What's it going to mean for business between the U.S. and Cuba?
I think for the moment there will be some tweaking. I will tell you this because I'm also a practicing attorney. My phone has been ringing off the hook. I practice very much in the area of Cuba licenses under the existing embargo. And whereas I used to get a few inquiries from smaller businesses and sort of nibbling at the edges from larger businesses, this morning we have received some very significant calls from big entities that now have a keen interest in exploring what the possibilities will be with Cuba.
This is big American companies trying to sell to Cuba.
That is correct. And to establish relationships, one of the things that I believe is captured by the new guidelines that the president is promoting is financial services. So I think you're going to see some keen interest by the banking industry.
John Kavalich at the US-Cuba Trade and Economic Council, you're in New York. Do you agree? Is it historic? Is it significant?
The relationship between the two countries has always been about a series of moments, not one in particular. This is one of those series. It is significant in terms of what the president has announced he intends to do from the U.S. side. But often what gets lost in the frenzy that comes with these announcements is the Cuban government will decide what's in its interests to accept. So this is always not just about what we want, but it's about what they feel they can accept. And with any expansion of the relationship, commercially, economically, or politically, there always is uncertainty. And the Cuban government has always been adverse to uncertainty. So no one should expect corporate jets fueling up at Teterboro Airport in New Jersey, or Cuba teams that were assembled in the 90s and in the early 2000s to be reassembled, or the Cuba files to be dusted off and run up to the CEO's office. That's not going to happen because companies have been here before. And there are a lot of questions need to be answered. Financial services, potential is large. But I'll give you an example of something that happened during the Bush administration. That was when U.S. companies began to export food and ag products to Cuba again. One of the provisions of the Libertad Act says payment of cash in advance. So U.S. companies went to the Bush administration and said, can we get direct correspondent banking? Can we have our bank in New York be able to directly receive the payments in U.S. dollars from a bank in Cuba.
Okay.
Well, the Cuban government didn't want to do it because there were, after 9/11, regulations that came into place about money laundering. The Cuban government said, wait a minute. We're not giving up all this data.
Understood. Pedro Freire, both presidents are going to find this possibly a challenge selling to their people?
Well, no. I think that the greater challenges for both presidents is to sell to political factions within their governments, particularly the Cuban government. I think that the Cuban government is about to go. There's a new watershed event down the line here a few years, where Raul Castro has already announced that he will not be up for re-election. And for the first time in a very long time, somebody who doesn't have the last name of Castro will be running the country. Within the Cuban government, there are hardliners, there are pragmatists, there are doves, and so forth. So for him to position himself and sell, for example, to the hardliners, that this is a good thing, it's going to be a challenge.
Okay, briefly, John Kavalich, do you agree with Pedro Freire that this is President Obama's attempt to establish a legacy? He's got a couple of years left in office. Would you agree that this is his moment for trying to sort the Cuban issue?
Absolutely. You know, this was the gross release was negotiated because of political issues with the Jewish community and the state of Israel. The rest of the opportunities are meaningful. It'll be interesting to see what the Republican Congress tries to do surgically, whether they can or will do anything. But for U.S. companies, Cuba's 11 million citizens have always been attracted because they are aware of U.S. brands. So for U.S. companies, you don't have to go in and build brand awareness. You just have to expand on the awareness that already exists. And that means less costs to entry. And therefore, Cuba's always going to be on the radar, but it's taking its proper place. So a lot of frenzy today, but things will calm down and then businesses will do what they do.
John Kavalich at the U.S.-Cuba Trade and Economic Council in New York, and also Pedro Freire at the Columbia Law School. Thank you both very much for joining us.